Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you, first of all, very much for the invitation to present here this morning. It's my great pleasure to be here. My name's Eamon O'Moore. I'm an Irishman speaking on behalf of Public Health England in Boston, so there's irony in there, I'm sure. In terms of disclosures, the only people who pay me anything are Her Majesty's taxpayers, so thank you very much. Learning objectives I've listed for your information, but basically my task this morning is to try to describe some of the public health challenges related to prison populations in Europe, describe variation in organisation and delivery of healthcare to prison populations across Europe, describe our human rights approach to prison health, which is outlined in our recent WHO policy document, Good Governance for Prison Health in the 21st Century, which was launched recently in London, and this is the document that I would refer you all to. And we will describe, finally, how human rights principles inform practice in England, which is seen as a model of good practice for prison health across Europe. The theme of our talk today is really about shadow and light, and Europe provides the world with some real beacons of hope in terms of prison human rights, but there are still many places where the shadow is dark and deep. But we first of all cast to a global view, and this documents the prison population rates per 100,000 globally. I draw your attention to the United States of America, which is almost singular in the world in being red in this color-coded map, which means you've got more than 700 people per 100,000 population incarcerated in your prison system. And to echo my colleague Sir Michael Marmot yesterday, it must be like that because you wish it to be so, because you have a functioning democracy. So it is a human rights issue to deprive people of liberty. But you're not alone. Second in the beauty contest of people who lock more people up than anyone else is Cuba, followed by the Russian Federation, Thailand, Lithuania, Ukraine, and then down to the United Kingdom, which is made up of four constituent countries. England and Wales, we incarcerate about 148 people per 100,000 population, and it's much of a muchness for the rest of the United Kingdom. However, in terms of the total number of people we incarcerate, the United Kingdom, England and Wales specifically, is fourth in Europe in terms of the total numbers of people incarcerated. We incarcerate about 85,000 people at any one time. Now, thinking about the WHO European region, and the WHO European region is the only WHO region to have a health and prisons program, again, something to reflect on today. There is no official data collection on imprisonment that covers all the 53 states in the European region, but there are 47 member states that are also members of the Council of Europe, and in 2012, about 2 million men, women and children were imprisoned on any given day throughout the WHO European member states, and about 6 million people are incarcerated per year in the European region. In most member states, the prison population has increased in the past 10 years, with population rates ranging from about 600 to less than 10 per 100,000, and an average of about 150 prisoners per 100,000, so the UK is just on the average. Now, our colleague earlier talked about architecture, and of course, one of the contributing things to the reason why prisons are a source of super-spreading for TB is because of the design of prisons within much of Europe. Overcrowding is common, lack of appropriate isolation facilities for infection control is common, and TB is one of the reasons why prisons are an important issue for public health. Data from 2002 showed that the prevalence of disease among prisoners in Europe was 84 times higher than the general population, and in 2010, in three WHO European member states, reported TB cases in prisons exceeded 10% of the total burden of infection in those countries, with a relative risk of 145 for TB compared to the average population. Bloodborne viruses are a key issue for us as well. This graphic's probably hard to read, but all you need to be able to understand is that the red bar represents the prevalence of infection in prisons compared to the blue bar, which is the general population, and I think you get the message. If we look at mental health, again, this graphic shows a very powerful message. The blue bar is the general female population, and the red bar is the sentenced female population. and you can get a quick glance there at the prevalence of mental health problems. And similarly, the yellow bar is the general male population versus the green bar, which is the sentenced male prisoners. So the take-home message is people in prison have a significant burden of mental health problems. Suicide rates also are incredibly high among people in prison. If you look at the graphic, you can see again the red bar is the released female prisoners, and you can see compared to the blue bar there, the rate of suicide among recently released women is astronomically high compared to the level in the peers in the community. But all-cause mortality among prisoners is unacceptably high. Again, the same graphic here shows the blue bar as the general population and the red bar offenders supervised by probation services in the community from the UK. And this shows that there is a significant excess mortality among people recently released from prisons from accidental death, from suicide, and from all-cause mortality. So is prison a health opportunity? Well, it could be. Under UK health policy and international human rights policies, prisoners and other people legally detained by the criminal justice system are entitled to the same quality and range of healthcare services as those received by the general public. Detention settings can represent an opportunity to positively engage with people often classified as hard to reach and identify and manage health problems. Also, because people in detention settings spend the greater part of their life in their surrounding community, at least in Europe, then the health gains made within prison can have a positive ripple effect on their families and social networks. To illustrate this fact, this data from the UK again shows the fact that the vast majority of people in contact with the criminal justice system are actually cared for in the community. So the top graphic, the blue line, is what we call community disposal, which is people under the care of probation services or other community sentences, with the red custodial disposal, showing that only a small fraction of those in contact with criminal justice end up in prison. And then the bottom graphic shows the number of people sentenced to sentences of less than or greater than 12 months. The blue bar shows that most of our custodial sentences are for less than 12 months. However, there is a vast range of difference in practice across Europe, and in the vast majority of member states of the WHO European region, either the Justice Ministry or the Interior Ministry is still responsible for prison health. Prison populations also are not usually specifically identified in national health statistics. In the absence of such data, assessment of performance of member states can be judged by the growing body of case law concerning prison health on European Court of Human Rights and reports of the European Committee for the Prevention of Torture and Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. The European Court of Human Rights is a body which is taken very seriously in all member states, and unlike the United States, a judgment against you from the International Court does bear weight, and people do take cases. The European Court of Human Rights can receive complaints from individuals or their legal representatives, and in relation to prison is mainly on the basis of Article 2, which is the right to life, and Article 3, which is the prohibition of torture, of the European Convention on Human Rights. And even though the European Convention of Court of Human Rights always deals with individual complaints, many of its judgments reflect on the overall health conditions in a given prison or prison system. The Committee for the Prevention of Torture and Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment visits places of detention. They have the right to access by law, and they can assess how people deprived of liberty are treated, including the quality of health care. The CPT's role in assessing the quality of prison health care is in reference to Article 3 of the European Convention of Human Rights, which is the prohibition of torture, and they have a vested interest because of the issues around inhuman and degrading treatment inherent in poor prison health care. Even though the CPT always deals with specific institutions at a certain time, many of its findings reflect on health conditions in the wider system. Those two bodies between them have identified a range of issues in the European region, including lack of access to appropriate healthcare facilities, custodial staff inappropriately undertaking certain clinical tasks, custodial staff undertaking a gatekeeping function to healthcare services, lack of training and professional qualifications among healthcare staff, failure to adequately protect confidential medical information, failure to meet clinical needs of people living with HIV and/or TB, involvement of doctors and other health personnel in the punishment of prisoners, such as solitary confinement, which is a breach of our laws, and failure by doctors and other health personnel to record and report cases of ill treatment to competent authorities. Our response was to set up in the WHO region an expert group for the stewardship of prison health. The expert group concluded in the document I've demonstrated to you earlier that the management and coordination of all relevant agencies and resources contributing to health and well-being of prisoners is a whole of government responsibility, but that health ministries, not justice or interior ministries, should provide and be accountable for health services in prisons and advocate for healthy prison conditions. This document was recently published in London at a joint Public Health England WHO conference. I advise you to read it. The benefits of a whole government approach are obvious. It will lead not only to the improved health of prisoners, but the improved health of the whole country, improved performance of national health systems, and addressing health inequalities among deprived communities. In the theme of this conference, Think Global, Act Local, I want to just for the last 2 minutes give you some idea of best practice from the United Kingdom in prison health. In recent years, several member states of the WHO region have transferred responsibility for prison health to their health ministries. In order of time since the transfer took place, it was Norway, France, and most recently the United Kingdom. The UK, as I mentioned, is made up of four constituent countries. For justice, England and Wales are organised together. This is the criminal justice estate of England and Wales. We have a very complex custodial map. We have more prisons than most European countries, and indeed in the southeast of England, which is where I live, we've got more prisons than most small European countries. Public Health England is organised into four regions with 15 centres, and each of those regions have a responsibility for looking after prisons within their jurisdictions. Our journey to here began in 1774, when prison authorities understood that it was important to prevent the spread of typhus from the prison to the community by appointing appropriate medical officers. And it ended recently, or at least we're here at the end of that chain, in 2013, with the foundation of Public Health England and with NHS England becoming a single national commissioner for prison healthcare. I was interested in our colleague Raphael's discussion about architecture because the 1842 to 1877 period in British history was when the main prison building program happened, and most of our prisons are still in use today. But it is something that I would encourage you, if you're ever in Dublin, to visit Kilmainham Prison, which is still a fine example of mid-Victorian architecture as well as an interesting part of Irish history. But that was prompted when we decided to stop sending people to Australia. And you can make of that as you will. Our mission statement for health and justice in Public Health England is that we are committed to work in partnership with health and social care commissioners, service providers, academic and third sector organisations to identify and meet the health and social care needs of people in prisons and other prescribed places of detention, as well as those in contact with the criminal justice system in the community. Our aim is to reduce health inequalities, support people in living healthier lives, and ensure continuity of care. We work in not only prisons, but also immigration removal centres, young people's secure estates, and police custody cells and courts. We work with probation trusts, police forces, police and crime commissioners, and health and wellbeing boards, which are part of the public health system in Britain. Our principles, which I really just want to spend a minute on, we are absolutely married to the principle of equivalence. People in prison and other places of detention are entitled to care equivalent to that available to the wider community. Care must be evidence-based, care commissioned and provided according to needs, informed by rigorous health needs assessment, including collection and interpretation of data, and must be evidence-based. The care should be patient-focused. People delivering care to people in prisons should have their primary loyalty to the health and well-being of the people in their care. Healthcare staff should be appropriately trained and accredited and must participate in continuing professional development programs and work within a defined clinical governance structure. Patient voices must be heard. Prisoners and detainees should know their rights, should have their voices heard in designing and delivering healthcare services, and should know how to complain if they're unhappy. We must work in partnership, and working in partnership is essential. We advocate co-production with partner organisations. Continuity of care is an important principle. Our role does not stop at the prison gate. We must support care pathways through the gate. We must have a wider than prison impact in what we do. Prison health is everyone's business because addressing the health needs of so-called hard-to-reach groups has a ripple effect into the wider community. Finally, health and healthcare is part of the problem and part of the solution. There can be no health without justice, and no justice without health. This is a quote from T.S. Eliot: "Between the idea and the reality, between the motion and the act, falls the shadow." It encapsulates the fact that we have fine principles, we work towards them, but in the gap between the ideal and what we are trying to do is often the devil in the detail. The conclusions I reach are that public health challenges associated with detention settings are significant and increasing, but prisons and other places of detention represent a real opportunity to address health inequalities in these settings specifically, but more importantly in society generally. The challenge to ensure that work commenced in prisons and other detention settings is appropriately continued on return to the community is important to avoid the cliff edge effect of where people fall off the end of the care conveyor belt. In England, the opportunity a new public health system and the National Health Service has to address these issues more effectively is evident with the advent of a single commissioner for all prescribed detention settings. Finally, health and justice organisations must work in co-production mode to ensure effective design and delivery of services in prisons and beyond the prison walls. Thank you.